Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 15. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to present an interview with author Cecile Andrews, plus a bit about simplifying spring festivals. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, and effective lifestyle. Our mission is to equip people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. All three of those fit together, and they fit especially well with the five life standards of living more with less, which I discussed in episode 13. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. To learn more about us, listen to episodes 1 and 2. In this episode, I presented an interview with author Cecile Andrews. In the last episode, I presented Simple Living 101, Tools for Activists Shy or Bold, a resource that now has a social media supplement called Jerry's Excellent Adventure. Chapter 4 of Simple Living 101 focuses on discussion groups, including simplicity circles, and I know Cecile Andrews as the queen of simplicity circles. She is a community educator and author of Circle of Simplicity, Return to the Good Life, Slow is Beautiful, New Visions of Community, Leisure, and Joie de Vie, and co-author of Less is More, Embracing Simplicity for a Healthy Planet, a Caring Economy, and Lasting Happiness. She is active in the transition movement in the United States. She and her husband are founders of Seattle's Finney Echo Village, a neighborhood-based sustainability community. Cecile's website is cecileandrews.com. I'll put a link to her site in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Now, don't confuse her with simplicitycircles.com, which says it is about simplifying your financial life. It looks a little suspicious to me. In her most recent book, Living Room Revolution, a handbook for conversation, community, and the common good, she says, "Every man for himself. For too long, we have lived in a competitive, consumer-oriented culture, destroying the well-being of people and the planet. We believe that money brings happiness, yet all too often, the opposite is true. The pursuit of wealth at any cost corrupts our values and diminishes our lives. The resulting inequality breaks down social cohesion and generates envy, bitterness, and resentment. Greed breeds more greed." Living Room Revolution refutes the notion that selfishness is at the root of human nature. Research shows that people, given the right circumstances, can be caring, nurturing, and collaborative. Presented with the opportunity, they gravitate toward actions and policies embodying empathy, fairness, and trust instead of competition, fear, and greed. The regeneration of social ties and the sense of caring and purpose that comes from creating community drive this essential transformation. At the heart of this movement is the ancient art of conversation. Living Room Revolution provides a practical toolkit of concrete strategies to facilitate personal and social change by bringing people together in community and conversation. The heart of happiness is joining with others in good talk and laughter. Each person can make a difference, and it can all start in your own living room. Here's my interview with Cecile Andrews, recorded earlier by phone. I have the pleasure of speaking today with Cecile Andrews, a longtime friend in the voluntary simplicity movement. Cecile is a community educator and the author of at least 4 books. We'll be talking about her books briefly today, and mostly about her newest one. But I'd like to reminisce a little bit first, Cecile. I think that you and I met at the Simplicity Forum, which was organized a couple of decades ago by Vicki Robin. And at that time, I think your book, The Circle of Simplicity, Return to the Good Life, had come out. That was about 1998. And from that, you developed quite a system of simplicity circles. Can you please tell us a little bit about simplicity circles and what they're for?
Well, it's so exciting to me because, well, when I first, I was a community college administrator, and I first put on a program on voluntary simplicity in, I think, 1989, and we only had 4 people sign up. Well, that's not enough, you know, so we had to cancel it. And then we did it again in 1992, and this time we had 175 people come. And one of the biggest differences was that people were in simplicity circles. Now, this is something that I had been inspired to do by a place called Highlander. And I don't know how many people know about Highlander, but it was where Rosa Parks had been trained, and so it was very active in the civil rights movement. And their whole idea was you bring people together, let them talk, and they will come up with the answers. And so it was so inspiring to me. I got to go there in the 60s, kind of in the heart of the civil rights movement. And I felt like this is something I wanted to really do. And I was also once inspired in my community college. We had a speaker come who was a Native American, and he talked about how his education was as he grew up. And he said, my grandfather asked me to sit there all day and watch the beavers build a dam. And at the end of the day, he said, what did you learn? What did you feel? What did you think? And I thought, oh, wow, how do we bring people together to talk and think about simplicity? Because, you know, if we think of simplicity as living deliberately for the well-being of people on the planet, it has to have some level of people thinking things through, because our American dream, of course, has given us so many false directions. And so this idea of coming and thinking together, and then I realized that as people tried to change their lives, to simplify their lives, they could more easily do it if they were talking about it and learning from each other and getting support from each other. So the core of Simplicity Circles was always, you know, come together, and maybe you're going to say, talk about, well, how can I slow down a little? And each person talks about their own story. And when you talk about your own story, you really link up with other people. And then you say, well, what's going on in this culture that makes us hurry so much? So you have some critical thinking about our culture. And then the third part of it is always, you know, what can we do to change? And there are two things. One, I think we have to link personal and public change. But you have to do personal, because otherwise you kind of lose heart. And so people say, well, you know, I'm going to try to, you know, just move more slowly. And then you ask, though, you know, what in our culture has made us so fast? And so maybe you then work into policy change, you know, that we need more vacations, that we need more time off, that we need guaranteed parental leave. So the Simplicity Circle, people talk together, they think together, and they act together. And it was always transformative, and I always loved them. And so we had them all over the country.
Now, I understand that some of them are still going. I was just contacting some of the Simplicity Circle leaders at what's called DC Simplify in the Washington, D.C. area, and they're doing very well. What is your feel? Do you see that there's still an interest in Simplicity Circles? Has there been a decline? Is it stable? And how does it relate maybe to the Northwest Earth Institute that promotes discussion circles?
Well, I think people are starting to see that social change really has to, John Dewey says, democracy begins in conversation, and that social change has to come from people discovering the importance of it in their own lives. But that said, I think Americans seem to have a short attention span, and so we certainly don't have the excitement about voluntary simplicity circles that we did, say, you know, in the late 90s and during the 90s and 2000, but we're doing many of the same things, just with different words, to kind of capture people's attention. Now, the nice thing about the simplicity circles is I didn't want people, as you say, some of them are still going, I wanted it to be so simple, so that people could do it themselves. They didn't need to be trained. They didn't need to have an expert leader, that you had this simple structure of 3 steps, and so anybody can do it. And so what I've done these days is expanded it to, in particular, people talking about community and asking, you know, when in my life have I experienced community? What in our culture keeps us from having community? What steps can I take to build community? And to me, this is just the same as the simplicity circle, but it, people understand, right, are responding to the idea of community these days, at least around on the West Coast, than even the phrase simplicity. So I think it's an interesting thing that you have to keep, you know, kind of responding to what's out there. And it all comes back, in my mind, to our questioning our basic American belief that if we're rich, we'll be happy, and that all the research says, no, that isn't true at all. And so if we talk about simplicity or if we talk about community, we're trying to change those values. I think around money is for me always kind of the core of it.
Well, you've jumped over to your current book talking about community. It's called Living Room Revolution. I'd like to also mention that in 2006, you published the book Slow is Beautiful, New Visions of Community, Leisure, and Joie de Vie. And that fits in with what you were talking about before, is that slowing down is important. You've also been working with John DeGraff, the publisher of the book Affluenza and the videos that preceded it, Affluenza and Escape from Affluenza. Tell us a little bit more about your experience with the slow down movement.
Well, that's another thing that I, again, you know, all these come back to the same thing of, you know, asking ourselves, you know, what's important, what matters, you know, what contributes to the well-being of the person and of the planet and of the public, you know, of that we're all in this together and the common good. But we have to keep figuring out, you know, what appeals to people. And the whole slowing down, I don't think, took off in American culture at all. I think it is, on one level, people yearn for it so much, but we feel it's almost impossible to attain. And so I think in Europe, there was much more of a response to the idea of slowing down. Right now, we do have in the Washington State Legislature a bill to give people vacation, guaranteed vacation of 1 week after they've worked someplace for a year, and then two after 2 years. But the thing is that people are not standing up and demanding this. I am pleased right now, are more responding to the idea of inequality. But the slowing down, I'm not sure, you know, why it doesn't take off with people, because most of us, if asked, think what we really want is that opportunity to enjoy our lives, to savor what we're doing, to have time to spend with friends and family, you know, to move slowly, to have some contemplation in our lives. Everybody, if you ask them, would say, oh, yes, yes, I'd love to have that. But to actually bring it about, maybe we're also worried about, you know, unemployment, that to even ask for policies about vacation or sick leave just seems way too much. So it'll be interesting if we get a response in Washington state on this new legislation.
John also worked on Take Back Your Time Day, which was an initiative of the Simplicity Forum, and there were a number of conferences around the country about how to reclaim your time so you'd have more time not only to enjoy your life, but more time with your family. Again, there were several conferences, but that is also leveled off. And I think there are still some efforts in the state of Washington. State of Washington and Seattle in particular seems to be the center of the voluntary simplicity movement currently. Let's move on to your next book, Cecile, Less is More. This came out in 2009, Embracing Simplicity for a Healthy Planet, a Caring Economy, and Lasting Happiness. Now, you produced that with Wanda Urbanska, who at that time was producing a weekly TV series for public TV. Can you tell us a little bit about that book and also the fate of the TV series?
Well, the book was done for New Society Publishers, who's a Canadian publisher that really focuses on activism. And I started feeling that, wow, you know, we really needed to have the voices of so many people in this country involved in simplicity. And so that's an edited work, and I just think it's an incredible work, because I can say that because I didn't do all the work. It's from, you know, lots of different people, and I worked on that, as you say, with Wanda Urbanska. And again, as I say, she doesn't do the TV program anymore. It was just the case of, you know, I think the news media in particular is always moving on to, you know, something new, something that's going to, you know, grab people's attention. And it's kind of, it's almost, I mean, people have said, you know, we're all Americans have ADD. We just can't concentrate. And maybe we feel, and this is what voluntary simplicity says, we don't feel fully alive. And so maybe if we feel like, oh, I'm going to hurry to this new subject, we will feel more fully alive. So anyway, Wanda isn't doing that anymore, but it was wonderful doing it with her. And the whole idea that we have to work for this caring economy, that we have to work for a caring culture, that it isn't just making changes in our own lives, that we have to work for those bigger issues, I think is a constant theme that all of us have had in the simplicity movement. But, you know, we're America, the United States is kind of an empire in decline, and maybe we're just kind of thrashing about, not knowing what to do. And again, that's why I feel the circles are so important, because we need that time to quiet down and to talk with each other and to think, like to build thinking in to our lives instead of just, you know, acting without contemplating anything. But I loved hearing, because there's the subject of voluntary simplicity to me is so exciting and so captures the American spirit, because there's always been a simplicity movement. We may be, you know, the richest, most greedy culture in the world, but there's always been the opposite response of, you know, no, you know, what's really important? Money isn't the most important thing, you know, and the pursuit of money just leads to our downfall. So that's always been a voice in American culture from the beginning. And so it'll, you know, I kind of feel like it's rising again. Lately, I've been getting kind of some signs that people are again turning to say we've got to simplify. And so I love doing that, hearing from all these voices around the country in our edited work, Less is More. And it's interesting, because I think in the beginning of simplicity, you know, when all of us got together, as you described, we focused a little more on the simplicity as less. You know, it was less consumerism, less rushing, less work. But what I would always get, unfortunately, is people would say to me, what is that thing you're involved in, that self-deprivation movement? And I'd say, no, you know, we're trying to make your lives happier and more fulfilling. And so all of us, I'm sure, worked on that. And so, you know, we started talking about less is more. And then finally, I thought, oh, I'm giving up, because I had this young man at my house, and he was looking at the stuff in my refrigerator. And he looked at one, my grocery list that I just started, and he said, whoa, he said, you really walk your talk. And I said, what? And I came over, and the list said bread and water. And I said, no, you know, this isn't my rations for the week. This is for a party that I'm going to. And so I thought, you know, how do we talk about this important issue in ways that reach people? And I think the, you know, the take back your time is certainly one way, voluntary simplicity. But another one that I do talk about in my new book, Living Room Revolution, is the whole sharing economy. And that's an interesting thing to explore. But before I explore it, let me see if you had some other questions on the lessons, less is more.
Yes, I do want to move on to the sharing economy. We've been talking about that with Simple Living Works for some time as well. I have a couple of other questions. One is about the both the secular and the faith-based approaches to voluntary simplicity. And because you have mentioned a couple of different approaches, and the one that we use is the classic book, Living More with Less, which comes out of the Mennonite community. But there are a lot of people who are not people of faith who also practice voluntary simplicity. What I've noticed more recently is what I would call an over-spiritualizing of voluntary simplicity. It's sort of, and I don't mean this critically, it's sort of, well, mm-hmm. you can have your cake and eat it too, that you can make lots of money, and then you can also practice voluntary simplicity and enjoy your wealth and feel good about it and feel good about your relationship with God at the same time. And so this is something that I'm thinking a lot about. We have focused more on the practical aspects of voluntary simplicity, but it always has this base of the faith. But what I'm struggling with is folks who I would say over-spiritualize voluntary simplicity so they can have it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Do you notice that?
It's an interesting way to put it. And I was reading something this morning, well, something that I put in my Circle of Simplicity book, that it was about a Swedish man who was saying that he liked to have a lot of high taxes for the rich, because then you took your focus away from being rich and put it on other things. And what that meant to me was, we have a culture that's set up in this country which makes everybody feel that the most important thing is to try to get rich. And so they do feel, just as you said, you know, they can make plenty of money and still live simply. And I think that it is something to realize, whether it's faith-based or secular, that you can't have it both ways, and that your commitment is either to money, or for some people, like, it might be God, or whatever they have in their approach to God. They may not use the word God, but they might use it as a, you know, universal force. But that has to be the approach. It cannot be the pursuit of money. And we're really, I think, just in a terrible dilemma in this country, because it's such a big thing that you're successful if you have a lot of money, and that you must be successful. So I think it's a real dilemma of what to do about it. I think that's a very important question.
Well, I hope you'll be glad to hear, Cecile, that I've been updating our handbook, Simple Living 101, Tools for Activists, Shy or Bold. And I'm not trying to overwork activists or volunteers. I'm just encouraging people, whether they be self-starters or whether they be shy people, to actually share with other people about voluntary simplicity. And so that's happening. Let's move on now to your most recent book, Living Room Revolution. You've touched on it a couple of times. Is there anything else you'd like to say about it?
Well, I like what you just said, because I do think there are different kinds of activists. And I think both you and I probably agree that when you are an activist of some type, it gives you a sense of meaning and community that you get nowhere else. But you don't have to be. You can be a shy activist. I like that. And one of the ways of doing it is to talk about your values. And you don't have to talk about it in an oppressive way. I mean, I always liked the Jewish theologian Martin Buber, who talked about I, thou, or I, it, and that you can't treat other people as objects. You must treat them as subjects, and so you never have to try to overwhelm them and point the finger and say they're bad, they should be different. You just tell your own story. You know, you tell your own story about simplicity, and you never know where it'll strike a chord. And so really at the heart of my Living Room Revolution is this faith in people talking to each other, people having conversation. And it can be conversation as you go through your day. And one of my favorite ways of putting it is the stop and chat movement, that as you go through your day, you smile at people, you talk to them, you treat them like human beings, you treat them with respect and dignity, and you smile, you have a few words to say, and that doesn't sound important to some people, but it sets a tone for a culture. And what we're trying to do, I think, is create a more caring culture, and that's one of the ways to do it, because then people begin to feel they belong someplace and that they're not alone, and they're more likely to simplify. I mean, the pursuit of money and material things is usually just a substitute for the more important things of your connection with other people. And so if people can feel connected with each other, they're not going to want this other stuff. So what I do in Living Room Revolution is talk about, you know, one, this commitment to conversation as a method of social change, and that you can either talk to people as you go through your day, or if you're in a group or an organization, and in fact, how important it is, and churches may be, you know, one of the last places where people can really find community and know that they can go and talk about things. And of course, there are some churches that don't allow this, but I think, you know, usually there's a community there. But what they find is if you're in a group, and I love this statistic, I think it's in Putnam's Bowling Alone, he said that if you are not in a group now and you join a group, you cut your chances of dying in the next year in half. In other words, social ties are so important, and particularly to be in a group. And so all the happiness literature really confirms this. And in fact, another statistic I like, it's about Denmark, which is rated one of the happiest countries. And they have a rate of 95% of their citizens are in some sort of club or organization. So to begin to think about belonging someplace, of getting involved in a group, and sometimes it doesn't even matter what it is. It might be a bridge club, but you, the way you treat people there, the connections you make, you know, the way you treat people with caring and respect makes a difference in our long-range change in this country. And so one of the things is that people either can do it consciously, like join a circle. I've been calling them community conversation circles, and particularly having them about community, or having them about the idea of dignity, that people come together and talk about those. Or it might be that you just, you know, invite people over for what we've done. We called it News Night, for people to come and talk about current affairs. But that you make a commitment to bringing people into your home to talk with them, that our living rooms become centers of conversation, and taking back the room from the television, and that we can make a big difference by connecting people that way. And so I try to spend most of my time. Somebody once said to me, oh, Cecile, when she saw me doing another small group, said, oh, Cecile, you must have been a sheepdog in a former life. And I thought, oh, well, indeed, I certainly am a sheepdog. It's nice to know who I am. So I think everybody can be an activist of this sort. And when you care about other people, you don't care about stuff as much anymore. So it's much easier to live more simply.
Thank you so much, Cecile, for those words of encouragement. And I'm sure you'll be glad to know that I am Danish. So.
Oh, really? Oh, that's exciting. Whoa.
Also, our mutual friend John DeGraff, of course, is working very much nowadays in the happiness movement. And I've interviewed him, and I'll be linking in the show notes to this podcast, to that interview, for the people who want to learn more about the happiness movement. Well, one quick final question, and that is, what's on the horizon for Cecile Andrews? Do you have another book involved, or are you getting into other media?
I'm always thinking about books, and then suddenly I have to sit down and write it. And the thing that's kind of keeping my attention right now is this idea of dignity, and how do we create it, how do we promote it. But part of that is this sharing revolution that I find it so exciting, and you probably know about the magazine, online magazine, shareable.net, and that this brings together so many of our themes of simplicity, that instead of owning all this stuff, you share it with other people, you borrow, you barter, and so I have found that extremely exciting. And I'm actually moving myself into a co-housing here in Santa Cruz, and I see that again as kind of an example of the whole sharing movement that, you know, there are going to be, we're in urban co-housing, and so we're living in downtown Santa Cruz in a kind of more of an apartment building that's being built. And what I see this as is kind of a kind of emblematic of, we need to learn to live together, we need to learn to collaborate more, and I see this as kind of an experiment. So I suspect that I'll be writing about that in some form, because I think it's an exciting, again, that came mainly from Denmark. So very interesting. So that I'm excited about, of trying stuff out, you know, rather than just reading. In fact, I read less than I used to, because I figure, no, I can learn things from other people or doing things with other people even more effectively. So it doesn't sound good for a person to write books. It's like, oh, don't read these books, just go out and live it. There seems to be growing interest in this country right now, and in part inspired by Nelson Mandela, of the idea that we've got to have more wealth equality than we do. So to me, that's an important part of, you know, all the stuff we've been talking about.
Go ahead if you'd like to expand on that.
Well, the interesting thing is, again, it goes back to this belief that Americans think if they're rich, they'll be happy. But that leads to wealth inequality, and what wealth inequality leads to is an undermining of people's feeling that they belong. All sorts of things are indicated by wealth equality. It's the biggest indicator of longevity, that people in this country who are rich don't live as long as the people in Denmark who have much more wealth equality, because wealth inequality undermines social ties. It undermines social cohesion. We don't believe that we belong together, and so there's so much more, you might call it hate that comes out in society, an animosity, because we feel that we're not all in this together. And so it's interesting that it's not just a matter of social justice, which is a big part of it, but that nobody is happier. Even rich people aren't happier in a society that's kind of ripped apart by wealth inequality. So to me, that's part of what we're doing. And I think that, you know, voluntary simplicity has always stood for social justice, and that's the part of it today that people are paying attention to.
Thank you, Cecile. You've been listening to my conversation with author Cecile Andrews. I hope that she and the last episode on Simple Living 101, Tools for Activists, Shy or Bold, had convinced you that you can be or continue to be a simple living activist. An example of a thriving simplicity circle is in Maryland and the D.C. area. Simplicity Matters Earth Institute, Simple Living for a Sustainable Future, which uses the Northwest Earth Institute guides. I'll put links to their site, simplicity-matters.org, and to the Northwest Earth Institute in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Now, co-founder of Simplicity Matters hosted me for refreshments at a meeting of her Simplicity Circle in Bethesda, Maryland. 22 folks attended, and I'll put a link to my blog post travel journal in the show notes so you can see their faces. We have some spring festivals coming soon. We talked about Lent and Easter in episode number 12. Links in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3, lead to helpful articles on Holy Week, which is the week before Easter, entitled To Understand Our Neighbors. Then on Easter, which is this year is April 20th, we have Better Than Chocolate Eggs, Signs of Faith, Easter in the Philippines, and Easter Seder We Remember. Then International Women's Day on March 8th has articles What Time of Night It Is, Celebrate Women, Host a Women's Day Dinner, Take Back the Night March, Ecumenical Decade of Churches in Solidarity with Women, Celebrating the Unnamed Ones, Litany of Solidarity with Women, Knowledge is the First Step to Change, Table Talk for International Women's Day. For St. Patrick's Day, on March 17th, we have the Wearing of the Green and a Table Talk on St. Patrick's Day. For the first day of spring, March 20th or 21st, we have Table Talk for the first day of spring, Celebrate Spring by Celebrating Life, Celebrate Earth, A Right for Spring, Begin to Recycle, Let Earth Breathe, and All Night Vigil. For Central America Week, the week of March 24th, we have The Spirit of Archbishop Oscar Romero and At Home. For Passover, which this year is Tuesday, April 15th, running 7 days to Monday, April 21st, and in the U.S., Passover ends 1 day later on Tuesday, April 22nd. In the Jewish calendar, a holiday begins on the sunset of the previous day, so observing Jews will celebrate Passover on the sunset of Monday, April 14th. A couple of articles, one, Freedom from Slavery, and what links are in place in your community. We also have some thought-provoking art and bulletin inserts for the season. See the link to worship alternatives in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. We've received wonderful positive response to Simple Living Works podcast and blog, which I hope to share with you next episode. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org. Leave a message on our Facebook page or on our Simple Living Works blog. All those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. In the news, colleague Lee Van Ham of Jubilee Economics is gaining considerable traction with his new book, Blinded by Progress, Breaking Out of the Illusion That Holds Us. More details in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. He's been interviewed lately on Inside Personal Growth with Greg Voisin, on Joycotting with Esme Walsh, and on This Is How I Roll with Jamie Hope. Links to those interviews are in the show notes as well. In addition to this podcast and its show notes, we post new Simple Living Works blogs several times a week. We hope you'll read and subscribe. This blog is the companion to our 2 times a month podcast. The content is different, though the subject, of course, is the same. Click on the blog at the top of the show notes for each episode. As one of the early and long-standing supporters of alternatives, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, known as the ELCA, has pledged to keep a copy of each resource produced by alternatives and to make copies available by request at a nominal cost. Feel free to contact them at the office near Chicago. The complete contact information is given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. In episode 16, I plan to talk about simplifying rites of passage, such as birthdays, weddings, and funerals. Well, it's time to wrap up episode 15th of Simple Living Works podcast. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Subscriptions are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Pinterest. Urge your friends to do the same. Provide your email address to receive our monthly Simple Living Works e-news. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. Thanks both to John Pitney and to the band Earth Mama for the music on this show. Find details in the show notes. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage, simplelivingworks.org. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of the Simple Living Works podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.